You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert. Right now, the U.S. Supreme Court, as we just heard, is taking a first look at Wisconsin's partisan redistricting case this week. As lawyers make their case in D.C., a group of citizens is coming together to fight gerrymandering. Our next guest is a mathematician at Tufts University specializing in geometry. She founded the Geometry of Redistricting Summer School there, which now has satellite events around the country, including Wisconsin. The idea to bring together mathematicians, data analysts, legal scholars, and political scientists to use their expertise to combat gerrymandering. The next event is coming in October 12th through 15th in Madison with a workshop and conferences. Some events will be open to the public. Moon Duchin joins us now. She is a professor of math at Tufts University, specializing in geometry, and she's the founder of the Geometry of Redistricting Summer School. Moon, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
Well, where did you first get this idea to use geometry and take a whack at redistricting and partisan redistricting and create the summer school?
Well, I'm certainly not the first person to have the idea. It's really quite an old idea in American politics that ugly-shaped districts are a tip-off of some kind of agenda behind the drawing of the map. Even the original gerrymander back from 1812 political cartoon embodies that idea. If the shape looks like a reptile, it's probably not very fair. The problem is, if you look at the history of how this has been handled in courts, nobody has ever really come up with a convincing idea of what makes a shape good, what makes a shape bad, so that you can throw out bad maps on the basis of shape. I personally came to the problem through teaching a voting course during the presidential election, the primaries in 2016. I thought I'd do a little unit for my students where we'd look at shapes of voting districts, and the more I got into it, the more I realized that modern geometry has a contribution to make.
And what is that contribution?
Well, so in a nutshell, I would say this. The shape analysis of voting districts has usually been done just by looking at their outlines on a map. And today we know that you can get really far with what you might call discrete geometry. So instead of just looking at the blob or the Rorschach blot, you actually want to look at the network of where the people are and how the populations are interconnected into communities. And that gives you a kind of graph or a network that shows you a lot more about what's going on with the people. And then you can apply geometric ideas like curvature and eigenvalues and a whole host of other ideas to the network.
So it sounds, to my ear, and I'm not a mathematician, it sounds complicated, and I think that can be one of the hurdles is, you know, you look at those making a case before the Supreme Court or anyone interested in the subject is how do you explain this in a way that might be a little more simple and elegant? Is there a way to do that?
Well, absolutely. So here's a nice way. Fundamentally, the thing about the gerrymandering problem is that it's just complicated, and there are so many factors that go into a map. If you think about it in terms of all the choices that you make when you're drawing a districting map, it's an unthinkable, more than astronomical number of choices for how to take a state like Wisconsin and take its wards and divide them up into districts. That's actually just, you can't even think about the space of all the possibilities. So one really beautiful way to take complicated ideas and present them persuasively is going on these days using computer algorithms to sample. So here's the principle. If I get a computer to crawl around and make millions of alternative maps, lots of different ways of cutting up Wisconsin, and then I study how they turn out politically. So in a case on partisan gerrymandering, maybe I'd look for how many Republican seats you get in the assembly out of 99. So what will happen out of those millions of possibilities is you'll get a bell curve that shows all the different ways it could turn out. And then you look at Act 43, at the current assembly's plan, and you'll see it's all the way out on the tail of the bell curve. It's not in the fat part. It's an outlier. It's out at the extreme in terms of more Republican seats than the great bulk of most of the plans. I think that provides a pretty approachable and pretty understandable visual representation that the legislature's plan is extreme.
Looking at this from a mathematician's perspective, we've been hearing about some of the ways that those before the U.S. Supreme Court are making this case, and one is by looking at something called an efficiency gap. We just heard about that. Do you think that that is an effective way to approach this?
Well, it's interesting. So I think that the geometry approach and the distribution approach are complementary. So geometry says bad districts have funny shapes, you know, in its simplest form. And efficiency gap is saying, let's pay attention to how people are distributed. It looks at, as you know, it looks at something called wasted votes with the idea that a bad map will disperse or over-concentrate the people out of power. And I think any competent analysis of a plan has to do both things together. It has to do geometry and it has to do statistics. So I think efficiency gap is a really cool idea, but it's only a beginning to the conversation. One of the things that I really was encouraged to see in the court documents for this case that opens today, in the motion to appeal, you'll see that the plaintiffs say, this isn't all about the efficiency gap. That's just one of many possible ways to see that a plan is too extreme. I completely agree with that.
We're talking with Moon Duchin right now, a math professor at Tufts University specializing in geometry. She's also the founder of the Geometry of Redistricting Summer School. And Moon, you take people from various disciplines to approach this problem. Math is one of them, also political science, legal scholarship, data analysis. What can bringing that group of people together to take a look at this, what can that do that looking at a single approach might not be able to do?
Oh, yeah, that's great. So far, it's just been enormously constructive, I think. We're seeing people from different disciplines, and they're really engaging with ideas from across the aisle. You know, take math in particular. One of the stereotypes of mathematicians is that they're eggheads shut up in a room who don't know anything about the real world, right? And that can be true sometimes. But in this case, we want to get the mathematicians actually thinking about how to have ideas that fit the legal framework and ideas that activate the political values that we share in a democracy. So you can't do that in isolation. You really need to have interdisciplinary kinds of cooperation.
And are you seeing big ideas come out of these meetings, not just at Tufts, but there's a similar event coming up in Wisconsin at UW-Madison. There's also an event like this in California and Texas. Are you seeing big ideas come that you think have a viable chance of explaining this thing?
Absolutely. There are a few papers already in the preprint stage that came out of the meeting at Tufts. So that's already very exciting to me. People collaborating, people from different backgrounds working together and getting scholarship out into print. Also, the teacher training aspect of what we're doing is getting lots of traction, I think, in classrooms, and that's a wonderful way to reach many, many people. So I think, you know, taking this multi-pronged approach, we're able to have a lot more kind of penetration into different settings and discourses, and I'm really optimistic that we're going to come up with some new and really usable ideas.
Now, in the past, Justice Kennedy has hinted that the right kind of metric might convince him on this issue. Do you think it is possible to come up with this litmus test, maybe one that's before the court right now that satisfies everybody?
Well, I'll tell you what I would like to see happen, and I think it's not impossible. I don't expect, nor do I hope for, the efficiency gap to be, you know, enshrined as the one answer here. I don't think that's likely to happen. But what really could happen is the courts could finally come up with an outlier framework. They could say, in the past they've said partisan gerrymandering is justiciable. It's something we can think about, but we don't know how to measure it. I'd like to think that now they could be persuaded that computers have finally caught up with the problem and that this big ensemble of alternative maps as a pool to compare a plan against, that really points the way forward. And let me clarify, you know, they're not, I don't think, likely to say what the threshold would be, how far out the tail of the bell curve you have to be bad, but that's okay. We have lots of cases where the court has given a framework with details to be filled in later. And here I really hope that they take this computer sampling approach with an outlier analysis as the framework moving forward. That would just be a huge step forward for the gerrymandering problem.
And Moon, only about 30 seconds left, but it sounds like you have a plan to get some new maps out there before the 2020 census. What's the goal?
That's right. We want to be ready when the new census data drops to draw lots of neutral maps for all the states and have them on record so that legislatures can use them as tools and as benchmarks.
Moon, thanks a lot for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great. I hope to see people at our workshop in Madison.
That was Moon Duchin, professor of math at Tufts University. She specializes in geometry, and there are now several of these geometry redistricting summer schools going on. There's one coming up in Madison, a similar version of that, at UW-Madison, October 12th through the 15th, and some of those events are open to the public. Coming up after the news, we'll talk about the politically divisive Facebook ads that were posted by Russians pretending to be Americans before and after the election. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to Central Time.